Welcome to Control Intelligence, the control design conversation that goes deep inside the automation and technology that machine builders and system integrators rely on to keep machines humming. I'm Mike Bassador, Editor-in-Chief of Control Design, and in this episode, I'm joined by Doug Woods, who's been the president of the Association for Manufacturing Technology for 17 years and counting. AMT hosts the International Manufacturing Technology Show, better known to most as IMTS, every 2 years in Chicago. Doug has served as a director and chairman of the AMT board, as well as on the boards of the National Center for Defense Manufacturing and Machining, the MT Connect Institute, the Coalition of Manufacturing Associations and Reshoring Initiative. He's also was an active member in the National Tooling and Machining Association and was awarded their Distinguished Service Award. Doug was instrumental in developing MT Connect, the industry-wide interoperability standard that has grown in usage and implementation across a wide scope of manufacturing operations around the world. Welcome, Doug.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me. And just so you know, that bio is one I wrote for my mom, so she'd be impressed. Normally, I don't have to cover as much, but she loves it.
Well, good. I hope she's listening then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, AMT was founded more than 120 years ago as the National Machine Tool Builders Association and has a primarily U.S.-based membership of more than 650. Can you explain, for those listeners who might not be that familiar, who those members are and what the association's role is in advanced manufacturing technology?
Sure. It turns out to be all U.S.-based. So one of the key things, if you want to be a member of AMT, is you need to be U.S.-based. You don't have to be U.S.-owned, but you need to be U.S.-based. We're helping out manufacturers in the technology space here in the U.S. So, and of those 650 members, actually about 1,200 different locations, actually, if you take the total number of facilities. So it's a pretty broad spectrum. So the folks that are actually members of AMT are the people who make the things that everyone else needs to make everything else. So we're the machine tools. It's the robotics, the automation, the CAD/CAM simulation software, the tooling, the fixturing, the form fab things. I mean, essentially all of the manufacturing technology that you need to make all of the other products. So we're the kind of the tip of the spear for everything else that wants to be made at the end of the day, you know, including all the controls architecture, software systems that you guys are much more actively involved in. But essentially the people that are making the technology that you need to make the other products. And largely you asked kind of two parts of that was kind of how do we do that? What do we do for folks in that space?
Sure. Yeah.
The easy way for me to kind of point out what we do is to, you know, think about the basics. When I was, you know, so I grew up in the automation tool and die industry. And so when I thought about why I'd want to join AMT, which I did way back a long time ago from a company standpoint, I tried to figure out what's the core value that I can really get. And while AMT provides a number of different things, the things that somebody would pay to be a member are largely two big categories. So the unique ability to provide industry intelligence and or to get access to markets. So in the industry intelligence side, we have a complete research department with research analysts, economists, data scientists that essentially have unique data that we create and put together that we've had, like USMTO, US Manufacturing Technology Orders for like the last 70 years. Unique data that we get from things like IMTS, as you mentioned, or other international associations or government groups that we work with, that we're able to actually allow people to really understand the competitive landscape, kind of where they stand with their products, their service, their technology, things that they want to understand about trends in the marketplace. So the industry intel side is extremely valuable and unique. It's not something you can just Google and try to find your answer. It's unique data that we just have. Mm-hmm. On the other side of the spectrum, market access. It's, you know, IMTS. It is that platform, one of the biggest marketplaces, you know, in our industry, and one of the biggest around the world for manufacturing technology. But also for market access, we have technology centers around the world to help our members actually get into other markets, to help them export. And so, you know, we've had them for decades and decades in China. We've got one in Chennai, India. We've got it in Monterrey, Mexico. We've been active in Brazil as well as in Eastern Europe. So a number of different locations and places for people to get involved leveraging our products and services. So we do international pavilions for our members at all those sites where we've got technology offices and centers. And so those are two of the big ways that people would say, "Oh, I'm willing to, pay for membership for that." But you also, we have advocacy that we do. We'll probably talk a little bit more about that later. Things that we do there, we have a complete technology team doing things with multi-international labs and government agencies. So there's other things that we're doing behind the scenes, media support and development. But the things that people largely are looking for is that access to the marketplace and unique industry intelligence.
So US-based, but certainly a big global presence as well.
So we're trying to help our members get into the other markets, and we're happy to help international companies if they want to get into this industry to connect through our distributors are part of our membership. So if there's a great technology company that happens to be in Germany or happens to be in Japan, Korea, wherever, that wants to get into the U.S. market, we're not by any means anti-competitive. If you've got a great technology you want to bring into the U.S., we're trying to help the manufacturing base in the United States be as good as it can be. And we're strong believers are that, to really have a strong national economy and national defense, it's all based around manufacturing. And manufacturing doesn't exist without manufacturing technology to accelerate it. So if we can bring something in new and have that be US-based, hiring US people, us getting additional training and technology, end of the day, it's a good thing.
Absolutely. You mentioned IMTS, and I mentioned it first, but you mentioned it as well. Kind of your flagship event taking place every 2 years. It's the Western Hemisphere's largest manufacturing trade show with almost 90,000 attendees this past time. Although I do remember a time when well over 100,000 attendees have been to IMTS in the not too distant past. And this is the one that I just kind of blew my mind. 40 million pounds of machinery was on display in 2024. What do you think has led to such singular popularity and interest in this particular event?
It's really fantastic when you think about what happens every 2 years when it comes around to IMTS. I mean, logistics and pulling it off, you noted a few things. I mean, it's amazing to pull off an event this big. And also, you're mentioning over 100,000. Yeah, that was 2018. That was the high water mark. So we were increasing in 2014, 2016, 2018, growing from the 80s, 80,000s to 90,000s to over 100,000. And then obviously during 2020, we had a reset button thanks to COVID. And then everybody's working their way back up and we're back on that train. So we keep increasing over previous years. We're actually looking to be over 100,000 this year, back on track to growth. And I think the reason IMTS is successful is that when it gets to capital equipment and advanced manufacturing technology, though you can do a lot of things online now to understand the basics, you can just equally go to a lot of open houses that a lot of our members do an excellent job on. They're somewhat singular in their focus. And again, if you're making big investments into capital equipment and technology is going to be changing your factory, your facility, your shop, you want to see, touch, and feel. You want to compare across aisle. You want to compare across buildings. Is there different technology that you could actually buy to solve the thing you thought you wanted to buy, but by walking around the 13 miles of aisles, you actually run across a couple of people doing something that looks like what you want and you didn't anticipate that was a thing to go do. There's just something about having that many engineers, software developers, executives, production management people that are in the booths that are walking, available to be discussing what their technology does. And then for you to go, there's another company I saw over here. I'm going to go see what that one's like and try to really understand what technologies are best positioned to do what you need to solve your problems. And so most people that are going to do an effective job come to IMTS are first going to be identifying what do they need. If you go shopping at the grocery store and you have no idea what you're doing, you just go up and down the aisle with a cart, you're going to have a lot of extra junk in your cart and waste a lot of time. Come with a problem you want to solve. You don't have to know what equipment you want to buy. Come with a problem you want to solve. And then while you're walking around talking to people and you can figure out ahead of time on the planner kind of where you can roughly get to your ideas, from the people that have the technology. It's just really walking around and talking to people. You're going to meet people and hear things and get recommendations. You can go to a tooling person, ask them about who they think might be a good work holding person that they've worked with in the past. It's that idea generation. It's those collisions that happen. It's being able to see the things when you're investing six figures of money to go buy a thing, touch it, feel it, talk to the people, see if they really understand your needs and they can take care of all the things that you want from service, support, installation, integration, or collaboration with other products. And you can do all that in, just a couple of days with all the people that are there.
Great. What about some of the current economic indicators? How has that been shaping AMT's long-term outlook for capital investments by machine builders and job shops?
Yeah, well, I mean, the last few years have actually been very good. So 2025 was a really good year. The metrics we keep are USMTO, the machine toolers, and it was up double digits last year. To give you an idea, right now we're up year over year from a very good year last year. We're up 36% this year. We anticipate this, the second half of the year might level off a little bit. So we're going to be somewhere up over 20 some percent, by the time we get to the end of the year over last year, which is a good year compared to the year before it. So it is pretty positive from that standpoint. The big sectors that are moving, having the biggest impact, I think are probably standard across the board for most manufacturers these days. I mean, it's aerospace, space, and defense. That's a large element of it. Throw in that on top if you're doing anything related to data centers. And anything related to data centers, sometimes people go, well, I don't make the kind of stuff that's, GPUs and stuff. Well, I get it, ASML, they got that down, other people. But if you think about the earth that has to be moved, the cabling that has to be laid down, the generators that need to be there for support, the racks that need to be done with sheet metal and dies that need to be machined. So don't kid yourself. All the crazy spending that's going into the water pumps, I mean, everything else that goes into it. That's another big sector, but those core sectors are driving a lot of it. Automotive has been okay. It hasn't been great. There's some repositioning because of the whole move. Are we going all EV? Uh-oh, maybe we should be more hybrid. Where's our mix there? So some adjustments there, and that part of the market's coming around. Medical strong, but it's a smaller overall sector. So the big ones are those first ones that I mentioned, and it looks like it again going to be a good overall year for. The overall manufacturing technology industry.
Fantastic. It's always good news.
Yeah.
You mentioned COVID a little earlier as well, and certainly there were some major supply chain disruptions during COVID, and those disruptions have not really lingered, but they've resurfaced in different ways for a variety of reasons. How does AMT support members as, say, North American OEMs shift away from distant supply chains toward more regionalized, resilient production?
Yeah, I mean, I from a, the if there's got to be a silver lining out of the craziness of 2020 and COVID, it was this clear awareness that you can't keep chasing low cost dollars around the world to have your product made, because things like that can happen. And even separate from that, we've had tsunamis affect, delivery and shipment of things from Japan. We've got wars going on in Europe that's affecting things that we were getting from Europe in shipments. Things obviously going on in the Middle East affecting oil. So there's lots of things besides 2020 that made us really have to take a serious look at what do we need to do to change this paradigm. And you have to, always get back to the fundamentals. We can't just be a service-based industry. Someone kind of, or some group of people thought that, hey, maybe a good idea was, we can just be engineering solutions and everybody else can make all this stuff and, we'll be fine. I got a news flash. Value is only created three ways. You either grow it, you mine it, or you make it. There's only ways to create value. And if you give all those away, you're not creating value, you're just transiting dollars back and forth. And to do all three of those things, the good news is you need manufacturing. So we've been very active with the reshoring initiative and Harry Mosher. I'm on his board of directors. I think he's been one of the first people really getting out there and looking at the total cost of ownership and making people understand, you got to look at all of the costs when you think you're saving money when you go abroad. And then it's really about then, okay, how are you going to get it done here? If you bring it back, everyone's talking about, oh, we've got all these issues. How are we going to scale it? How are we going to And I think the good news there, and workforce, of course, gets to be an issue, and I'm sure that'll be a topic we can talk more about. But the reality is, workforce has been an issue since my grandfather started a shop in 1947. Workshop has been an workforce has been an issue for my grandfather. Every decade, I can remember him talking to me through the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. I've been running businesses since the 1990s. I will tell you, every decade I ran a business before coming to AMT, workforce was an issue.
Right.
Workforce always has been, always will be an issue. The good news is, we're the most innovative country in the world, and we figured out how to get stuff done. And as well, as much as I love things that the government can do that are helpful, and the current administration is doing some great things for manufacturing, manufacturers don't wait for the government to figure out how to solve their problems. We figure out how to set up our own apprenticeship programs, we figure out how to do our own training, we collaborate with local community colleges, we get things done. So the reality is, all these things are things that can be really overcome. And as people start to leverage automation to minimize that differential, and when they start to take a look at some of the now being able to leverage things from AI to equalize some of that differential, as you look at a lot of kids that are looking at their 4-year degrees and wondering, bachelor's of science and literature, wondering how they can pay for a house, going, maybe I should have picked up a trade or a skill. There's a lot of people that don't just want to code, they want to make things with their hands. There's a transition that's happening that works in our favor. And I think we're in a really good position going forward that more people are going to come here. The tax policies from the Big Beautiful Bill, the incentives to try to get to organizing tariffs, and we can have a discussion about tariffs. I've got opinions about tariffs, but the reality is there's, nearly $1 trillion of committed investment to people to want to make things here to kind of avoid that in the future. And so all those things start to really make that reshoring initiative seem dynamically impactful, more than just a concept, which it was maybe 10 years ago to talk about.
Sure. AMT has certainly evolved, and so has IMTS beyond, say, traditional metal cutting into a platform for industrial software, digital twins, connected systems. How is the AMT guiding tr more traditional equipment builders through this transition from hardware manufacturers to solution providers?
Yeah. I mean, the good news is most of them are doing it on their own because they see the opportunity. What AMT does is help them see the opportunity. So, like, our cycle for trying to figure out how to help our members is kind of three steps. It's awareness, it's acceleration, and adoption. So we need to make our members aware of what's happening in different technology areas where there's opportunities. We do that because we're embedded with, like Oak Ridge, stuff that we're doing at the DOE, Lawrence Livermore, Sandia Labs. So we're connected with universities at Georgia Tech and MIT and Purdue. We're doing things with the innovation centers, whether it be MXD or, the folks with the robotics, AIM, and that's NexFlex. I mean, we're working with different groups so that we are knowledgeable enough with our technology and research teams to create awareness of our members of what's out there. We also go to all the major trade shows around the world and collect information from our peer associations. And so that's how we start creating awareness through our events, through our media, through our content, through our shows. But the next thing is to, like, accelerate them through that process. And so then it gets a little bit more detailed into specific projects we might be doing, specific collaborative events that we do with people, conferences that we're doing. So you can get deeper into the subjects that you have interest in and find tracks that we're doing. Also, get unique research projects done. So if you want to know a lot more about a specific thing, you can get our research team to do a detailed deep dive for you and your product platform or your market on that product or that technology. And so as we do that, we're trying to get you to adoption. And adoption is actually using that software, that machine system, that, digital twin solution that you're going, huh, how could I do that? Getting them all the way to the adoption part of it. And one of the biggest places that we can obviously do that are the pavilions we put up around the world and IMTS, where we're actually creating that opportunity to actually physically get to adopting the product or service, bring it into your plant to make a difference. And so it's those steps, and those are kind of the overview way that we walk you through those steps.
Right. Well, speaking of some of those more advanced type of technologies, you've had at some recent events, some of the major themes you've have centered on AI agents or conversational machine controls, and even agentic workflows. What role do you see generative AI and agentic AI playing in solving the skills gap across machine shops? We've talked about the workforce a little bit previously.
Yeah, Mike. I mean, I think that's it's going to be enormous. We have this issue where there's folks, my age and/or older that are obviously going to be leaving the workforce in not that many years. And you go, how do you take all that knowledge, all that that's been put into like our fingers, our hands, our time in shops, and what we did, putting automation systems together, et cetera, et cetera. And luckily now, thanks to kind of a gaming company that got into GPUs, we've got the ability with our friends from NVIDIA to be able to do some super high-end computing that we can now really start to build out these large language models. The data centers are allowing us to have access to an enormous amount of space and an enormous amount of processing. And we can now take incredible data on past service, on past methodologies for doing things, technology reports, preventive maintenance reports, manuals, everything you could imagine, and be able to sift it and sort it to make it easy to understand and consume by a newbie that's just getting into the industry. Much as you would now asking chat a question about something, its ability to give an answer is pretty generic. But when you start building specific large language models that can now give you generative information, kind of just, hey, here's something we've created an LLM just for CNC machining. Here's an LLM just for robotics. Here's an LLM just for controls and PLCs. As those LLMs get put together, they're specific. You can now start to get into leveraging some agentic tools or agents to do specific things where it can take a look at multiple different pieces of information, parse them together, and apply them to something you're doing in your facility. An even cooler thing is starting to come out now. Like I can remember one of the divisions I had when I first started running a company was I had a mold division and a thin film coating die division. A lot of what made those tools really work well were people hand polishing and finishing the cavities. Well, how to do that, what to do, how to translate into an automated kind of system that could do automated polishing in a robotic standpoint. You have to really understand the process in some level of detail. Now you've got folks where you can put cameras at their workstations. You can put cameras actually on their vest or kind of just like your running headlamp and be capturing live video of the entire process of what someone's doing, like setting up the tooling on a machine, finishing a mold, getting a wire EDM set up. All that's captured, and you can do it over and over again, and then capture that inside a model, and then have that model be able to look at the model of 10 other people on 10 other pieces of equipment, and then be able to educate people. Here's the easy ways to do it, and I can automate the front end of that for you. The days where I had to figure out G codes and M codes to program something on a CNC, they are going to be gone. I mean, the reason you walk into any tech lab and you see a bunch of kids at a university lab, there's a bunch of CNCs that some of our members were nice enough to provide them. They're sitting there idle most of the time. You see a bunch of additive machines over in the corner, and there's a line of people waiting to get on them. Why? I take a digital picture of this. I send it to a little app on my phone. I get it chopped down into a little STL or a step function file, send it over to that machine, push a button, come back later. It's going to be that way for machine tools as well. And that's not that far away. And those are huge steps to getting more people into the industry where your brain power is doing the fun stuff, being creative, not figuring how to slug through G codes and M codes and figuring out what to do to get the machine set up. A lot of that's going to happen for you.
Wow, great insights for sure.
It's going to be
The
fun. I wish I
yes,
was 20 years younger.
yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And it's speaking of those advanced technologies like that, the Emerging Technology Center at IMTS showcases some live end-to-end digital manufacturing workflows. How do you determine what's going to be what's going to take center stage at the Emerging Technology Center?
Yeah, I think it goes back, Mike, to one of the earlier questions we were talking about, like, how do we help our people through, what are these changes and things that are going on?
Right.
Because we are working with the government labs, and this one, Oak Ridge, we're doing a bunch of stuff with them. Because we're doing some stuff with Sandia, they're connected in this one. Because we work with some, leading companies in the space, we can partner with them once we introduce different technology or see they've got a technology that would fit. The ETC is typically set up to be something that we want to make the general attendee aware of, that's really not ready to buy tomorrow, but is going to be, just maybe 3 years out in the future. So you should start thinking about it. So it's another part of what we do, creating how do we get people from awareness into accelerating the understanding to actually adopting and buying it or using it as a tool. And so this year it was really one of, how do we take kind of a combination of things that are technologies that are really out at the leading edge a bit and kind of put them in a bleeding edge solution. And so the idea was this concept of, when you're putting an automation cell together, you either got to, come up with something where you get flexibility or you can get quantity. Either it's, large volume or it's high variety. And like, how can we get variety at scale? And so we said, let's start taking a look at that. And then we started thinking, well, let's make it as practical as we can, something people can really sink their teeth into. We're like, well, what's the thing that a lot of people are talking about today? It's drones. And so we came up with this idea working with the folks at Oak Ridge. And we partnered then with FANUC and Prusa and NASAC and Schunk and Kennametal to kind of integrate all those pieces together. Into one cell where we're going to be making three different styles of quadcopters. We're going to be able to be changing on the fly during the show from different types and different sizes. We're going to be making one every 4 minutes. So every 4 minutes, there's going to be one of these bad boys coming off. We're also going to be flying them. And if we can get the nice folks at McCormick to play along with us, we're going to have some safety netting set up and we're going to actually have them swarm operating after we make them. So controlled AI swarm setup to be able to, but what we're showing is the rapid changeover that can happen from model to model, being able to make a product with integrated electronics, with the molding process and machining process. We're going to do some wire additive with the Mazak machine. So we got a CNC and a wire additive from Mazak. We've got FANUC with the robotics automation. We're working with Edgewater on our automation technology for integrating all that all together. And so it really is open minds helping us with the CAD/CAM software and the whole thing we've got MT Connect on. So you've got an open architecture system where we have collection of data that's semantically structured to begin with so that all the data information can be used on the fly to be building out changes or adjustments and improvements to the process. And so it's going to be really neat. And we have to have three tracks. So when you walk into the cell and you're an owner of a business, we have kind of like an owner executive track to kind of walk you through the value proposition, why this is important. We've got one that's kind of like your engineer application software development track, for the guys that want to be techie in that space. And we also have, folks that are, running a small shop or you're a machine operator and you're kind of just interested. So we've kind of got the operator, user, mold maker, tool maker, die maker, controls guy on the floor. They're just, hey, this is kind of cool. What's going on? And, get a good flavor of what that is. So we take you through that. Hey, here's something you should be aware of. And then we're going to have some things coming up after this to, accelerate your knowledge in this space, whether it be conferences or things that we'll do at our MT Forecast event or our MFG event, and different things that we do with web events and our media content, the thing, IMTS Plus, where you keep on learning more about these things in showrooms, keep people moving through the process. And that's what we did back in 2012 with additive. We did the additive car back at IMTS back in 12, 14. And, then it was more and more things we provide you in that space so that you can leverage it for your facility.
Wow, fantastic. Yeah, it's very interesting having the three different tracks depending upon who the visitor to the center is, just because their interests or their needs will certainly be different
Sure,
based on
absolutely.
what I'm looking for. Great. As machine tool builders increasingly are integrating now CNC hardware, PLC architectures, and multi-axis robotics into unified programming environments, what impact is the hardware software convergence having on standard machine design practices?
Yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting change. I mean, we started MT Connect back in 2005, working with the folks at Berkeley in their computer labs. We thought back then when they were teasing us on how backwards our industry was because none of our stuff's connects on the floor like they're all their printers and drives and other things you just plug in and everything just happily works. And they're like, "What's wrong with your industry? You can't do that." And I go, well, it's kind of complicated. Everybody that makes their thing has a proprietary solution. So it has taken, a couple decades, and it's really been a couple decades for folks to come around to say, the bigger opportunity, the more consequential solution to your customer is more of an open architecture solution that allows a lot of simple connectivity. To be able to grow, adapt, and do different things with the technology that you're buying, and to be able to get data information that's actually more easily usable. So schematic information that you can use, that you can apply to building out your preventive maintenance models or anything you want to be doing from a structured level when you get to being, kind of this world that we're talking about with AI. And so I think what you're starting to see in more and more players is whether it's just from an API or just an openness with what they're transitioning to from a control architecture standpoint, the ability to more easily connect different devices together and share information. There's a lot of people working in the space. There's major players that are working from an overall platform standpoint. There's software people that are working on things in this space. So obviously MT Connect was in that for a while. OPC UA is doing that stuff. SESME's been working in that space. Everyone's doing something. The trick is, if you're going to make a standard, you don't need three standards of the same thing because then it's not a standard. So what people need to do is get together, and if a standard's necessary, get a bunch of people that are competitors that all would agree there's not a better solution out there. Let's make one because making standards is really difficult, but they work when a bunch of competitors in the same space go, this is the best for all of us. And whether that happens to be USB or in our case, the most recent one is USD, Universal Scene Descriptor. We're working with NVIDIA and Apple and Pixar and Siemens, a bunch of companies on, making that a big part of what's going to happen, leveraging kind of the structure MT Connect created, and then moving into how do you apply that when you're getting into digital twins, then moving actually into an omniverse scenario, which I think is something every factory and facility is going to be doing. That happens with open standards, and less open standards the better. But let's at least get people where you don't have competitive standards because it just uses up a lot of time and energy.
Right. The bringing those competitors together, though, sometimes some are larger or smaller than others. And certainly, while larger suppliers have adopted some advanced IT/OT architectures, maybe some of the smaller job shops might have a little more of a struggle with digital implementation. So how do you help small and mid-sized enterprises to bridge that gap between the basic shop floor operations and a full digital transformation, if that's appropriate?
Yeah, I mean, so again, remember, our guys are the guys that make the equipment. The people who are those small shops, they're our partners at NTMA. So NTMA that I was with for quite a while, growing up in the tool and die industry, that's their folks. And so we do a lot of collaborations back and forth with NTMA. We have a technical issues committee that's chaired between NTMA and AMT. So we're sharing technical information, their tech teams with our tech teams. That helps diffuse that information down into the folks in some of the small to medium-sized shops. Also, the events that we do, like our annual meeting or our MFG meeting that we do, is typically participated by not just AMT members, but also NTMA members. Chance to collaborate, hear speakers on those topics, understands what types of tools that they can use. I think from focus of our members are getting a greater understanding of, not only from their own channels with their own distributors, understanding customer needs, but also then as we're able to bring together technologies that we're seeing across different platforms and shops, both here and internationally, that make it easier for people that have disparate equipment on their floor, because a small shop can't go out and buy all new equipment tomorrow. If the best products are all out tomorrow, they can't just go buy 10 new machines. They have to use the machines on the floor. So there's a lot of folks that are actually creating a secondary industry and being able to support older equipment by being able to do some integration of what used to be black box technology, but essentially using some of the adapters and agents, things that are out and available now to help those guys use equipment on their floor up to the next level. A lot of distributors have really become very good at this. So distributors are finding value. In the old days, it used to be just kind of sales, service support. The more you do of the latter, the more important you become, because service is really critical. A lot of them, though, have really diversified and have done a really incredible job when it comes to applications and integration and automation. And to that extent, they're the front line of being able to figure out how to take an older equipment they've got, keep that shop operational, because as operational and scaling up that you can get them with their traditional equipment, the more profitable they are, the more profitable they are, the more equipment they're going to buy, the more sales that distributor is going to get, the more it works better for the OEM. So the OEM wants to give those tools to the distributor. Distributor wants to get them into every shop that's in their district and in their area. That food chain works really well together, creating that next generation of product to solve a problem on the floor. And I know most of the major OEMs will listen to almost any of the stuff of that their equipment that's old and figure out how to keep it operational. It's amazing to me. Fanuc, as an example, when touring their facility in Japan, they've got tape machines that they still have parts for. Anything that they put out in like the last 50 years or something, they maintain spare parts for. So, the ability is there to keep them up. And the next thing is then to get them so that they can kind of jump into the next integrated data and information exchange as that next layer with the traditional equipment.
Amazing. You talked a little bit previously about the Capitol, and Congress regularly navigates recess cycles. Federal agencies continue implementing trade, tax, and workforce policies. What are AMT's top policy priorities in Washington in order to ensure U.S. equipment builders remain competitive globally?
Yeah, the big ones in tax was is a huge category, and I got to tell you the by acronym the Big Beautiful Bill. I mean, it was huge for us. And when you look at, we've been talking forever about just making permanent R&D tax credit. Our folks at all levels, the smallest shop to the biggest shop, they're making those investments, and they don't all pay off. And so you got to give them a little bit of room to write off some of that stuff so they can keep on playing the game. That's what keeps us as the innovative, leading country in the world. So that's huge. Accelerated depreciation, huge. They're talking about the expensive equipment, the 179 expensing, the inheritance taxes, a lot of subchapter S companies, and dealing with how do you handle that price tag when, grandpa passes away and passes it on to the kids, and like, okay, now what do we do? We got this tech. Oh, the beautiful, big, beautiful bill is enormous when it comes to that. So from a tax regulation is always also a big issue. Sometimes it handicaps you getting a plant expansion going, figuring out what to do in your facilities, handling all the paperwork for all the red tape to do whatever you want to do. Putting a new foundation in for that new machine you just bought, kind of just being practical about that is a big deal. We spend a lot of time on that as well. Trade, an enormous category. We talked a little bit at the beginning about tariffs. I mean, one of the things people don't like is uncertainty. So from a policy standpoint, what the administration is doing, focusing on a let's make it here, love the idea. I mean, that's exactly where you should be. We should be doing more than that. And tariffs should be used for sure anytime any country has got an unfair practice and they won't resolve it on their own. You can leverage tariffs to go actually take care of that, right? But as a long-term solution, it wouldn't be my best pick to do things because it creates a bit of confusion. So again, I see where they're going. I see where it could be helpful in making a lot of people. We talk about nearly $1 trillion of people who want to commit to make their stuff in the US because they don't want to deal with a tariff, that they otherwise wouldn't have to if they're making here in the US. I hope that can simmer off into then just a more selective use of that once you've made the greater case of why you should be here. And a lot of that does come here, that we then settle those down a little bit and just pick specific areas where someone's violating it. And otherwise, create certainty. You know the math, you know the numbers, you know the cost, you know what it is. You know, come here if you want to make it. If not, here's your cost if you're doing it someplace else. And let us just go play ball after that. So we spent a lot of time working on the tariff issue. And then also in workforce, we had a group that was doing this, SmartForce. It was one of our ways of being involved with this. We took the business part of that we were doing and said, look at, you know, we're really like number two at best. We're not, that's not our care. It's not what we're good at doing. We got into that when we merged the distributors into our organization. They were active in it. And so we brought some really great talent they had, but it was never a main thing that AMT was great at, while SME is great at that. And I'm again a believer, let's not have multiple people doing the same thing over again. Manufacturing just needs the best people in the best spaces, and don't be competitive at our level of an association or organization. So I made a deal with those folks. So look at, I'll bring all my stuff over, six figures of the revenue. You can have the folks, they'll swap over, you do that. What we still do with workforce is what we do at IMTS. So SmartForce at IMTS, there's a whole floor at the lower level that's almost a sh by itself would be in the top 30 trade shows in the United States, just what we do for the SmartForce. We're going to have about 17,000 students. They're going to be coming. We've been doing 15 to 20,000 students every 2 years that come in, and they're going to be practical things for them to put their hands on. These are the technologies that are upstairs, brought downstairs, and put in a way that people can actually use, try out, and test the technology. So we're taking everybody from, you know, grade school, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, right up through technical community college types that want to come in and kind of see where this technology can be applicable to them and what might be interesting for them. And so if out of that, you know, 20,000, you know, we get 10 or 20% of them say, I'd love to have an industry in this. You know, we got 2,000 to 4,000 kids every couple of years that are going to go back to some place around the United States and follow up a career in that space that might not have had they not attended.
That's fantastic. What strategies do you think have proven most effective at attracting younger talent into
I
technology
think it's
field?
These newer, funner technologies, Mike. I think people look at like doing stuff with a digital twin, talking about Omniverse, using an agent to go solve a problem, new robotics technology. You know, I get humanoids are kind of fun out there on the edge, but there's a ton of space with vision systems and sensor systems on cobots and robots and industrial applications that make a ton of sense. All of those are interesting and fun things to go, you know, develop. The stuff in metrology now that you can do with different lighting systems, you know, and touch probes and non-destructive testing using MRI technology and CAT scans. I mean, the dynamics of what the industry is today and the technologies that you can actually apply that are were like, you know, the top 1% of technologies that somebody maybe with an MIT degree only got to play with. Now it's like the 40, 50% technology that anyone come in and play with and have pretty cool jobs in a lot of different spaces inside manufacturing. And again, compared to some 40 degrees at pretty expensive schools that might cost you several hundred thousands of dollars, you can come in as an apprentice, learn some of these things, actually probably go to school at nights, also get your, you know, technical community college associate's degree for free, even get the company then to get you in for your bachelor's if you want to do engineering things. Or, hey, come right out of high school, get into one of the trade programs, apprentice programs at one of these companies, pick up those skills. Great folks coming from the Navy, the Air Force, that are picking up these skills because the same technology for what they're doing with satellites and tracking and systems, I mean, all applicable. So the workforce accessible group of talent is increasing dramatically because these technologies are exciting and more people are touching them in more places.
Great. Yeah, great insights for sure. You'd mentioned earlier about the tech centers that you have around the world, specifically overseas in markets like India and Thailand. How are global trade dynamics and industrial expansion in those regions creating export opportunities for North American machine builders?
Yeah, I mean, it turns out, China was that big place for quite a while. It slacked off for a number of different reasons. Well, a lot of that went into Southeast Asia, which is why, we set up, an office there in Bangkok to keep an eye on what's going on, what's happening in Vietnam, what's happening in Malaysia, what's happening in Singapore, what's happening in Thailand, and make our folks aware. There's a lot of aerospace and automotive stuff from around the world that's being made there. If you make a great technology, there's people that, for example, make really great robotic polishing systems that have found a real niche in a lot of aerospace and especially things that are happening and are doing a great business in Singapore and in Thailand. I mean, really good business. And so again, back to this, awareness thing, part of our job with the tech centers, our ground team finds where there's things like what people are doing at their US home square. And they go, okay, you make a great polishing machine. You guys make a great coating machine. You guys make great machining. You guys have a great vision. Like, this could be applicable here. And so we do that in those other markets. India, I mean, with the amount of their population and the folks that are highly skilled, that's going to be a really big market, can't be avoided. Our biggest tech center right now is actually Mexico. Mexico is our busiest and biggest tech center. Obviously, there's a lot of cross-border things are going on. We talked about government stuff getting USMCA kind of straightened out here, which hopefully is happening here in the next few weeks. That block is really important, which is why we've got a lot of support and people leveraging our Monterey Tech Center.
Fantastic. Exciting times.
Yeah, help people get to markets outside of their neighborhood.
Yes. Well, finally, one last question for you. What can we expect at IMTS this year?
A lot of everything we just got done talking about.
Right.
Some of the really cool stuff, we talked about the ETC. Well, we didn't talk about right next to the ETC. We thought we'd do this fun thing. We had some people talking to us about AI, and AI is going to be in a lot of booths everywhere. We said, but there's some small companies and some bigger companies that we kind of need to have something for them. So we set up this thing originally on a diagram. We're going to have like 10 or 20 little 10 by 10 booths, biggest you could get. Just part of, you can't do any big, if you want to do a big thing, go do it on the show floor. Small booths just get things started. It filled up in like a couple of weeks. So we did another row of 20. And it filled up in a few weeks. So we did another row. So there's three rows of 10 by 10s that are right off the ETC. These are some big companies, and these are some companies you've never heard of, but they're all involved with industrial applications of AI. Knowing what IMTS and what the IMTS audience is, that's going to be super cool and neat. There's all kinds of conferences going on that we're doing in partnership. There's lasers, there's ones with tool shops, there's ones with women in manufacturing, there's ones with the investors. We do an investor summit regularly, getting people interested in investing. So everyone goes after the software industry or maybe the robotics industry, take our whole manufacturing technology and bring the investors in. Let them see what's cool. Let's see what's neat. A lot of defense-oriented things. So we're doing a number of different things for special conferences. How do you get into selling to the Defense Department? We're going to be hosting a vice admiral from the Navy handling submarines, talking about what his needs are, how people can help them with what they're doing, building out subs. So whether it's the kinds of people around the edges that you want to meet, which is who you're going to be selling to, or the technology you want to find out about, you're going to see it between all the different halls. And we also this year moved additive right into the South Hall, which typically was just the chip making, the metal removal guys. And we said, look, additive needs to step up. It's not an industry, it's a technology. And it's an interesting technology in partnership with other technologies. And so we wanted it to be seen by the attendees as more an integrated manufacturing solution. So we pulled it out of the West Hall, we stuck it into the South Hall. So that's kind of a cool new thing. We'll see how that plays out for people when they're touring around. And some really cool things we're doing with Boom, with their supersonics. You're going to see them out in front of the West Hall. Some of that space we got back by having additive slide over. And so they've got their simulator there. You want to see how you can land a supersonic plane? Go give that a try. But see some of their aircraft. A lot of neat things going to be going on at the show. It's always cool. It's going to be fun. In fact, I think we're going to have an eVTOL out in our front area where we had the jet guy flying around. We're going to have an eVTOL out there flying around if we get the city to okay that one. So, but the eVTOL will be there one way or another out in the front lawn of the entrance of IMTS, and it'll be fun. Bring your good walking shoes.
Yes, always is, right?
It always is.
Yes. Well, thanks so much. Look, really looking forward to it. Thanks for spending the time this afternoon with me. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Mike. It's always great chatting with you.
Yes, same here. And listeners, thanks for joining me on this episode of Control Intelligence. If you've enjoyed this episode of Control Intelligence, brought to you by Endeavor B2B, don't miss our older episodes and subscribe to find new podcasts in the future. You can find our podcast library at controldesign.com, or you can download all episodes on Podbean or via Apple Podcasts or Google Play. Thanks again.